Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and baby, Jesus! Help us!
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick Radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in California!
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope for that cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doctor, homie. Fuck that. Black dude, holler.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker. Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J.Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Oh, shit.
Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio's CZW Classics, where myself and my good friend Stan are going to go over old school CZW shows, starting back at the first show that I attended and going forward. We got a lot to go ahead of us. What's going on, Stan?
Jay, what's going on, man? I'm excited to get started here, excited to do this, you know, thinking about it as we've talked over the last couple of days, right? This is something that we used to do damn near 30 years ago, maybe even longer than that, before I had reading glasses on to see my notes and before we became old men. I'm really looking forward to doing this in a different style.
I'm totally looking forward to this. I think it's going to be awesome to have different perspectives on this. And like I was telling you off air, you know, there's so many of these guys that I learned to respect over the years from seeing their entire body of work and the different things that they were doing, but you're just seeing for the first time here, so it's going to be really cool to see just your initial reaction and see if some of that changes as you continue to watch these shows.
Yeah, absolutely. I do know some of the folks from this show. I'd say five or six on there. A little bit familiar with the deathmatch style that goes around now, so as we get into later episodes, I'm sure the names will start to trigger a little bit more, right? But come 2001, where we're starting out, definitely focused on, you know, the end of WCW and the beginning, or not the beginning, but the WWE era, WWF era, not really into the deathmatch scene as much. In fact, first time I seen deathmatch was when I went to a show with you, one of the Cage of Deaths. I believe it was 2009 and 2010, right? So anything before that, I haven't seen. I don't know what it is. So this is going to be a good time of hearing my side, which, you know, we've watched wrestling for a long time together. We definitely have different opinions on wrestling, and that's okay. And I think that's what's going to make for a great show here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, what's I guess good to know about this, because back then in 2001 when I started going to CZW, they had already pushed Jersey to the limits with death matches. They were told by Christy Whitman, you can't do death matches in the building, and then they ran a show called They Said It Couldn't Be Done and did it outside the building and ran a 200 light tube match, which was never done in the States before, or at least in Jersey. I think Ian might have done them before out in Indiana. But so Zandig was pushing the buttons of the state and about to get the entire company banned from New Jersey, so that's why you see a lot less of the light tubes and stuff like that, and they would hop over to Delaware to do that stuff. So that's a lot of why you see this different style, you know, a little bit, and they're not quite as deathmatch, you know, related on the main events and stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, that actually takes a question that I had in here as going through the show. There's one shot with two guys with you know, something close to "fuck you, Whitman" or something on the back of their shirts, and that was going to be one of the questions, right? Being from Jersey myself, I knew Christy Todd Whitman was the governor around then, so I was going to ask you what it was, but we already got that one out of the way.
Yeah, that was their response to being told, like, hey, you're not allowed to do that. They're like, okay, we'll make shirts that say fuck you. So the other thing that, man, it's just so surreal, because going back, I counted today 8 different people that I saw on camera that are dead on this show. Like,
yeah, and I think that might be a theme. Yeah, I think that might be a theme, and as we go through it, right? Not to be in poor taste, but a little bit of maybe an unfortunate death counter as we go into these shows, because that is a part of the history that we're going back through and taking a look at.
Yeah, CZW definitely has its dark side, you know, so to speak. So this first show that we're going to go into is Crushing the Competition, from February 10th, 2001. My first show going there was Johnny Cashmere actually recommended this, because I saw him, Rick Blade, Trent Acid, and Nick Burke do a crazy ladder match in Tom's River that, like, they were doing just stuff with the ladder. I didn't see Edge and Christian and the Hardys figure out yet. I mean, they were in front of just, like, families and people in wheelchairs and, like, and after the show, Johnny was like, if you like this, you'll like CZW. So I said, all right. So then we decided to take the trip. Now, back then, we got lost. Me and my friend Jeremy were in the car smoking blunts while Nina was driving. And we were looking at MapQuest directions, and because that's what time period we're talking about. And, we were lost for a couple hours. We ended up driving around the town. We saw Gurk's Deli like 5 times before we saw the actual place. It was quite a venture. We actually ended up getting a police escort there after driving around smoking blunts, because at that point we were just like, whatever, you know. So we ended up getting there. But let's get into this card here. So this show started out, and this was one of my selling points. I didn't know a lot of these guys here, so when Cashmere was first telling me you should come out and check this out, he said, hey, we got Super Crazy and Tajiri coming in. So I said, well, you know, I definitely know those guys. This will be worth it, because I know a couple guys I've seen here, plus those guys from TV. So, yeah, why not? They opened up with somewhat of a singles match. You go ahead.
Yeah, so first off, I completely understand it's indie wrestling, and you're getting into buildings that you can't, as we just talked about, you know, getting banned from different buildings or having to move around and whatnot, right? But in this one, the batting cage in the background was a tough look to watch throughout the show.
It was definitely a soccer arena.
Is that what it was? Yeah, I just seen the netting there, right? It was, it looked like batting cages to me. It was a little bit difficult, to get into at first, but that's what we're going to see in these shows is definitely that independent scene, and I think that's what makes it so endearing to people like yourself that would go month after month after month, is it was more intimate. It wasn't, you know, they're just coming around once a year or whatnot, like the bigger promotions, and you get to know the folks, and you get to know who's in them. So to your point in match one here, Super Crazy and Tajiri, great pop for Super Crazy, right? The crowd definitely reacted when he came through the curtain. And then, sure. You know, first question off, I watched ECW, but I wasn't a true, to use a wrestling term, mark for ECW. I enjoyed it. I went to a couple shows. I liked it. But, one of the guys in the front row there, I don't know if it's a Hawaiian shirt guy or if it's, straw hat man or, yeah, whatever the hell he
that
is.
That hat guy, yeah.
So hat guy was there, So how long was hat guy still going to these CZW shows before he bowed out?
Hard to say, but he had stayed definitely well into the Philly run. You know, I mean, he was definitely there for a good amount of shows. You know, into the Philly run. The indie scene got so saturated after a little bit. Especially you figure 2002, 2003, Ring of Honor showed up. So then they started running monthly. So a lot of people had to make choices. You know, Ring of Honor would run right down the street from CZW at the Rec Center, the Murphy Rec Center. So it was like this battle, and more companies became involved. So it really, guys started to thin out there, and you didn't get quite as much loyalty. But he was there for quite some time, for sure.
Yeah, and then the other question before we get into the Jerry Super Crazy, I'm not sure I'm going to call it a match,
do
you think
CZW was meant to be as a teaser?
Yeah, do you think CZW was trying to fill the ECW void, or do you think they were trying to be different, unique? Because there is a decent amount of ECW folks scattered throughout this show.
Well, yeah, this will continue for a bit, and it will culminate pretty much at Cage of Death 3, where they'll bring different people in, and Xander will actually come out the following show and apologize to the crowd and the fans and the guys in the locker room, because he felt like it went a little bit too far in that direction, where they were trying to use ECW guys, but they knew they had a brand of their own that was, they felt, supreme. And that, that was the thing is, as you were saying, it was intimate, but the thing that was so special about it is they all believed in it. Like, they believed 100% CZW had something that nobody else had. And they made you believe in it, too, because they would do these next-level moves in these spots that you just didn't see people taking those risks elsewhere. And stuff that you'd be like, man, that guy's going to die, and then you just see him again next month.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a few of those moments here in this show with, it's still on the internet, it's still on IWTV, so I knew nobody did die, but there was a couple times there where, I wasn't quite sure when the move first happened or, when the landing first happened, I should say, in a couple of these of, wow, is this guy going to get back up? And we'll get into those as we go about it. For me, I took notes as I was watching it. So, as I go through it, some of the stuff almost answers itself. But this was just first time viewing, first time looking at it. So, I don't know what's going to happen later in the show, as you may have when you rewatched it. So, it started out, this Tajiri Super Crazy match started out extremely slow. Right? Like I asked before, they went out and messed around with the Hat Guy. A lot of crowd play at the beginning, a lot of crowd play, and then outside action, right? So they immediately went to the outside. There was a good toss into the chairs by Tajiri, but then he goes right into the ring to wait for Super Crazy. And at that point, I started looking at it like, what's happening here? This isn't the normal Super Crazy Tajiri match that we've seen in the past. And then, to my surprise, but not really, Nick Mondo interferes pretty quickly in about the 4 or 5 minute mark. Nick Mondo interferes, attacking Super Crazy. And then that's where, I don't know if it's a difference of opinions that we have, but that's where it starts to early in this show break down a little bit for me from a psychology end. Because as soon as Nick Mondo attacks Super Crazy, Tajiri then decides to attack Nick Mondo. And I'm sitting there asking the question of why, right? Why did you attack the guy that was attacking your guy? The bell hasn't rung. What is happening?
Right.
Immediately after that, Rick Blade comes in and clears out Nick Mondo, and then Blade goes on the mic.
Right. Yeah, so just a little background. Just a little background. At the time, I was watching some ECW, and towards the end there, Super Crazy and Tajiri were having some pretty hot matches on TV, definitely a lot better than what you saw at the CZW show there. So I think the general idea was, like, tease a little bit of that, and then we're going to tease our matches, which is Super Crazy, Super Crazy, Blade, and Mondo, you know, with Mondo being the heel. And then it just became heel face kind of deal. Like, as soon as there was interference, Super Crazy and Tajiri were still kind of faces. They were still going to, like, help each other. I know what you mean by it completely, but I think they were just trying to tease everything to get the show off to a hot start. But, as you said, it didn't land with you.
It didn't land with me, but I do understand that, you know, this is a promotion that is looking to sell tickets. And in that market that they're in, right, being able to advertise a match between Super Crazy and Tajiri are going to bring people to the arena to see the show, right? So I completely understand that. But you can tell that Super Crazy and Tajiri knew this was happening, obviously. It made them not really seem like they were into the whole beforehand, before the interruptions. And it was kind of, let's do something. We'll make that one throw into the chairs, and then we'll start with the interference so we can move on to, setting up matches later in the night, like you just said. Super Crazy and Rick Blade squared off. One of the problems watching these not being there live is, it's very difficult to hear what's being said on the mic. I couldn't tell you if Rick Blade, did a good job on the mic, did a poor job on the mic.
He did not.
It was mumble. fair enough. That was the next thing I had on here, and you already answered a little bit, right? Was, why did they start the show with a tease of Super Crazy and Tajiri, and then everybody evacuates? It was just a little odd. Like, even the way they went to the back, it was almost like they just walked off, right? There was no fight off to the back. There was no, nobody did the heel, I ain't dealing with this stuff, throwing their hand at anybody. And then I thought that, quite frankly, the Tajiri Super Crazy part, right, as I said before, they didn't care, and it made the first 4 minutes of the match feel as slow as molasses to me, right? It was just, extremely slow, extremely not what I expected. And quite frankly, it was about 8 minutes of wasted time. Even if they fight later, the setup could have been much better, right? Just attack on the entrance, come in and pull apart, like you just said, versus what happened there. Spare us the slow start, get the crowd involved, get the crowd hot, make Rick Blade come in and attack Super Crazy, like I said, on the entrance, and really, really drum up the crowd. But the way they went about it, I think they lost the crowd a little bit early as well. The crowd wanted the match. They wanted Tajiri and Super Crazy, so I think they felt like they were robbed out of that opportunity to see that. And quite frankly, they didn't give a damn about Rick Blade in that moment.
Yeah. No, I hear you. All right, let's get into the next one, because that was even a teaser, and we're spending a lot of time on it. So let's get into the next one. That was that three-way dance. Jeff Rocker, Eddie Valentine, and John Dahmer.
Yeah, so Dahmer came out first with a valet and a manager. The lady was the biggest of the group, which was interesting to me. She wasn't wearing heels, but she was the biggest person in the ring when they all came out, which is always, it's always that look in wrestling where the manager's valet is smaller to kind of give the other wrestler size. And Dahmer has some size, but having her in there was a little bit interesting to me to see her there. And then, once they got to the outside, it was fine with what happened. Eddie Valentine comes out second. Crowd really doesn't notice. He just kind of comes out. I don't know. It looks like Valentine is very, very new to either CZW or just wrestling in general. And then Jeff Rocker comes out. He's huge. He's in decent shape, but he's got to put down those imaginary suitcases he was walking to the ring with because he wasn't that big.
Yeah, he's got the hanger still in the shirt syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely, right? And he's in shape for the indies, but not in 2001 shape, right? If you think back 2001, you know, that was the Goldberg. That was, you know, all that stuff was happening. These guys were big, and then he comes out there trying to play that same role. And we'll get into more where he really drops the ball on that role later on in the match or the aftermath.
Right.
They did some rope work early with some with a nice assisted double drop kick that was a solid solid spot. Then they had the dreaded triple belly to back, which was interesting. Not quite sure who gets the worst end of a triple belly to back, but they definitely the middle guy and the guy taking the belly to back definitely sold as if it was those two. Not sure who it hurts more, but you know it was a cool spot. It was something different.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hanging Boston Crab by Rocker was really, really cool with Dahmer coming and dropping the leg drop. I really liked that spot. I thought that looked good. I thought it was realistic, and it looked like, you know, that's something that would hurt, right? Never mind did you just stretch me out. Now this other guy comes and drops his big old leg on my head as I'm being stretched. So I thought that was a great move. The one thing that again, I'm a little bit into that psychology piece or making it make sense. So
mm-hmm.
Second time within the first 2 minutes, they're doing the, I'm going to cover him. No, you're covering him. No, I'm going to cover him. And all I can think about is this spot doesn't make any sense to me. You knew you were in a triple threat match. This wasn't announced right then and there. So you didn't do any homework. You didn't have any game plan that you had to incapacitate one of the opponents to get the three count. Right, so I never like that, you know, I'm going to pin them, no, you get off them, I'm going to pin them, unless it's a tag team going against one person.
Hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me, right? So I thought that was, you know, that was a little, you know, I don't want to use bad terms or anything, but that was definitely an indie spot right there because it just didn't land at all as I was watching it because, like I said, I couldn't get over, well, wouldn't you know, like, he's standing 2 feet away from you. Why would he let you pin the guy?
Right, yeah.
Fast Eddie, like I said, coming out, even his entrance, he's super green. And then I think he tries to end it all. He comes with a tope suicida with a little extra sour cream, and it's wide right by about 5 feet. He lands head first. Bad camera shot, so you don't see it. There's no, you know, there's no camera shot of it, but you can tell there's no way he saved it, nor could Dahmer and or Rocker save it for him. Just went head first into the ground. You know, Rocker buys some time as Eddie tries to scrape himself off the concrete, and then next thing you know, Fast Eddie's back on the top rope. So, you know, it's one of those, if at first you don't succeed, try again.
Yeah.
And then Rocker hoists Eddie in a doomsday device and then position. And then Dahmer comes off the top rope and winds up kicking to kick Eddie, but winds up blasting Rocker right in the head, and they crumble to the ground, right? So that was fun to watch. You know, that's a part of this. You get to see, you know, it's live, right? And there is no it's live entertainment, right? So, you know, definitely missed the move, but, you know, you could still see Dahmer, you know, has something there, right? Because even the way he's, like I said, a bigger guy, he's able to get up on that top rope quickly and just happen to miss the mark a little bit with the kick. But, you know, take away who he hit and what he hit, it definitely looked good on that part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at this point, I'm nervous for all three of these guys, though, because I just watched the guy headfirst dive onto the ground. I watched him try to do a leg drop where he clearly does not land it right because you can see him not selling but, you know, actually grimacing in pain, and this is Fast Eddie I'm speaking of.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we have this spot here where dude's got somebody on his shoulders and just gets drilled in the face with a sidekick. So yeah, you know, like you said earlier, you know, you don't know what's going to happen next, but man, I'm holding my breath a little bit. Like, hey fellas, let's go home without bringing any more of these high risk moves into play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's breaking down fast, right? It's definitely breaking down fast. You can clearly see that Eddie just took an armbar into a lift class, because every offensive move that he had started with an armbar into a lift. So that was quite interesting to watch as well. It's been his only offense through this match, besides the dive of despair earlier where he face plants. And then at this point, we have another interference. Bar something, man. I didn't catch his name on the commentators. And then Rocker just starts pinning everybody. He's just like, I'm going to pin you, now I'm going to pin you, and then the match is over. You know, what do you remember from being there live? Is that, differently? Did it look better?
Dahmer was always impressive to me, and you know, even going back and watching that again, I mean, you see just the way that he hits some of those suplexes. They're super dangerous suplexes, and the way that he pulls them off where no one dies off of them, it's awesome. It really is, especially that far back in CZW for him to be hitting some of those suplexes as crisp as he did. Because I mean, you could look at some of those ECW's Taz suplexes back in the day. I mean, he barely got some of those off. Some of those are really close calls, you know. And, you know, Dahmer gets that good elevation on the guy and then puts him right in that spot where you're like, man, that look, you know, they're good. They're safe. So I always liked Dahmer for that, because he really pushed the limits of that. And he did a lot of creative stuff that, you know, a tweak on that different suplex that you haven't seen before. So that was always what stood out in the Dahmer matches with me for a long time. And you'll notice over the years that Dahmer seems to sacrifice himself to try to up other people. He'll either have his students in his matches with him, or he'll have just guys that he was trying to elevate or whatever. So he's just always been kind of that guy. I hated Jeff Rocker from day one, and then later found out that I think he had some kind of situation, like a promoter's license in Delaware. And that's why he got booked on the shows, because he had the promoter's license in Delaware, the connection for the promoter's license. So they used him in order to run shows there, as well as saying, okay, you could work on the show.
Yeah, for me, Rocker had a look, right? I can get behind Rocker's look, at least. Like I said, he's a bigger guy. It makes sense. You know, he wasn't the crispest in the ring, but, you know, at least his look worked for me. But Dahmer, you can see, and yes, I'm very interested in seeing Dahmer over the next series of shows and what I start to think about him. I think he was the one in this match that, you know, kept it together and kept it to be watchable. I didn't want to hit the fast forward button on my iPad as I was going through this, so I can say, he's the reason for that. So I think, you know, I think I'm interested to see where he goes and what happens with him as we continue this journey.
Yeah, sure. So then after the match, they wasn't that when they set up the talk show situation?
Yeah, so Rocker grabs a mic and tries to cut a Rick Rude promo, which I was...
Well, first off, the funniest thing to me is the fact that they sat down with their backs to the hard cam. I didn't really catch it the first time. Obviously, when I was there, I wouldn't have caught that because, you know, I'm there for the first time. Where do I know the hard cam from, you know, I'm still new to all of this. So they sit down with their back to the hard cam, and then Pastor Jim's trying his damnedest, but Jeff Rocker is, like, really screwing him. First, they're both sitting down, then Jeff Rocker stands up. So then when he stands up, Pastor Jim stands up, and then Jeff sits down, so then he sits down. It's ridiculous. It's like he doesn't know what to do, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly what I've seen, right? So I don't know the names, but yeah, Rocker at first grabs the mic and tries to cut a rude promo, like literally starts the promo with all you Philadelphia sweat hogs or wherever the hell they were, right? Sue Wells sweat hogs or whatever. And I'm like, is this guy really just grabbing the mic and doing Rick Rude? So that was definitely interesting. And then the manager guy, which you said, Pastor Jim or whatever, grabs the mic from the wrestler. And this is where I said before that we'll get to it, you know, Rocker's got the size, he's got the look, he's carrying his imaginary suitcases, but then when the manager just grabs the mic from him, he's like, oh, okay, go ahead, take it. It just doesn't work again, right? Because, you know, why is the big wrestler just letting the manager, you know, take the mic? It should be the opposite way. So I thought that was interesting. And then, yeah, the you know, two men in a moving truck came in with their carpets and a 1960s living room set. And, you know, at this point, they sit the wrong way, like you said, and I write here, clear as day, what is happening? And that's how I looked. And even from the whole thing, was Dahmer fired? They didn't say anything about that. Where'd the woman go for a while? Then all of a sudden, Rocker is now with the manager guy. Now the woman's in the ring. It's just a mess, right? There's no other way to say it. It was just, I had no idea what was happening. The audio didn't help, but even if the audio was perfect, I still don't think I would have understood what was happening in that moment.
Right.
To me, and then I have here, right, it looks like this is Fast Eddie's thought process after he scrambled his brains on that dive. And all of a sudden then the music hits and Trent Acid comes out with Zanzibar or something close to that.
Zanzibar, yeah.
And I'll say, you know, Acid tells Rocker to leave. And then again, although Acid looks like a star, right? The guy looks like a wrestler. He looks like a star. He's got it all together. He's got the hair. He's got the look. Rocker, again, this big guy, just tucks his tail between his legs and leaves. So now Rocker, biggest guy that I've seen so far, has let a manager grab the mic from him and let another wrestler tell him to go away, and he just walks away. So I'm over Jeff Rocker already because he's basically sold himself out twice within 20 minutes.
I laughed at myself. That same thing I laughed at myself when I rewatched it, and I just thought to myself, he was probably told in the back, look, you could have your match, but don't even mingle with any of the stars. Like, we're not fucking putting you in an angle with anyone who matters. Like, just don't fucking just get. So when Trent came out there and was like, get the fuck out of here, he's like, yeah, I got it.
Yeah. He's like, okay, buddy, see you. I'm like, why is this guy even here?
I can't challenge you. They're not going to book that. So.
Right. And then the mask guy, which is Zanzibar, takes off his mask, and quite frankly, nobody cared. He could have left it on. He could have took it off. He didn't even need to bring it out to the ring. Nobody seemed to know what that was about or cared. And now the manager guy is now interviewing Trent Acid, and quite frankly, I did hit the fast forward on the 10-second skip a couple times here because it was just 21 minutes of I don't know what's happening. And if Acid didn't look the way he did and Dahmer wasn't in the match, I probably would have started to fast forward a little bit earlier, to be honest. This was bad stuff. This is definitely opening card or opening match stuff on a card with no real payoff for me at all.
Yeah, but that's how it was. A lot of the shows started very slow and they built. Occasionally you'd have some of these early matches and then they would throw you a curveball and they would just like summon the hate club and they would come and destroy whoever was in the match. Like shit like that would happen. So then let's get to the next match. The next match we got Rockin' Rebel and Ruckus.
Yeah. So this didn't age well. Let's just start by saying that at all. So we have this Rockin' Rebel fella who comes out with a Confederate flag. You know, in the time period, I wouldn't say that was all that crazy, right? That was still a part of society at the time. And again, it hasn't aged well, but that didn't throw me off. But then the ridiculous racistness that came afterwards with the chicken and everything else was a little over the top for me now, especially in 2024, right? Looking back at it. I think even in the time period, it was in bad taste. especially, and we'll get towards it to the end of the match, especially because Ruckus never got was able to get the comeuppance on Rocking Rebel. So it left it really with a bad taste in my mouth of the angle that they were going with there. If Ruckus was at least able to put him in his place at the end, I would have been able to, you know, understand it a little bit more. Like, hey, he's going to say some stupid things. You're still going to get your comeuppance at the end. And, you know, the baby face goes over. I'm good with it. Don't like it, but understand it, especially in the time period. How did you feel live there, you know, when this was going down?
I was like, oh, shit. I was like, this is fucked up. Like, I you know, first off, I was amazed by Ruckus. Ruckus, like, I mean, I can't say enough good stuff about Ruckus, and we ended up becoming friends off of that. And just off of watching him, it was just like he was doing incredible stuff. He was so innovative. He was always trying to do, like, another level of something that somebody else did, you know, and RVD moves with another twist to it, or so just different stuff that he would create. And so I loved that. But then seeing, like, him just caught in this completely racist angle was like, man, this is rough, man. And I even talked to him after the show and stuff, and he's like, nah, man, it's all good. And I was just like, all right, I guess that's how it is. I guess it's just okay to just go as extreme as possible and everything's fine and this and that. I will tell you in retrospect, these type of matches with Rockin' Rebel hit way different because, not so fun fact, he killed himself and his wife a couple of years back. So, you know, I mean, just one of those things that, like, when you watch them back, and you just go, well, this is just a gimmick. You also have to have reality involved in it. And just knowing those things, watching it, it's like, yeah.
Again, and this is why this is going to be fun, at least for me and hopefully for the people listening, right? I have in here, Rebel looks like he's an absolute maniac. I didn't know about him, you know, killing his wife and himself. But yeah. He looked like an absolute maniac at times. He was, like, talking to the crowd in just ways that, you know, you don't normally see. It was more like, I wanna fight everybody here, and it didn't look as working as it should versus, mm-hmm. you know, he's just trying to be the heel and get a little rise out of some people. It was, you know, he had that look in his eyes that just isn't, you know, maybe all there at times.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, like, again,
the other thing I'll say about Rockin' Rebel's gimmick, too, is the thing that I didn't like because I was there for so much of it is that, you know, Tracy Smothers did a really good Confederate gimmick. You know,
mm-hmm.
Confederate Chris Hamrick did a really good Confederate gimmick. There's some guys that did it, and they used it as a full heel gimmick, and it never broke from being a heel gimmick. Well, I was there, and, you know, this is South Jersey we're talking about, and then it went into Philadelphia, and there's a good 30% of the crowd that was a face gimmick for them. You know, they start yelling, say something racist in the middle of the match, and you're like, bro, this is different for you than it is for me, you know, like, so that's more what made it a little bit more uncomfortable, where it started to blur lines of, is this a face gimmick or a heel gimmick, and am I, is this a rally, or are we still watching wrestling? What's happened?
Yeah, I can absolutely see that, especially when when Rockin' Rebel decided it was open mic night and started trying to just do comedy jokes from 1960, right? And it didn't go over well. None of it did. But to the match, right? Ruckus comes out hot, hits the ring, flips around, right, does his thing. The match goes outside, and then there was a really cool flip off the wall by Ruckus.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if it's the first time anybody's done it, but it's definitely the first time I can remember back seeing that that spot where he runs up the wall and you know, hits the flip. I thought that was really, really innovative. Mm-hmm. And then Ruckus, the one thing with Ruckus that was a little bit of a downplay for me was he likes to give the international sign for flippy shit. He really enjoys that international science of flippy shit. He hits it better than most, and that's, you know, especially in this time period, so it worked for him. But I knew what was coming every time because...
The handspring?
Go ahead.
What's that?
The handspring, but... the handspring and all of his flips and what he does, he was doing better than most at that at that time, right? I think you could put Scorpio in there and a few
right.
others, but, you know, Ruckus was, he was on point when it came to that, but before he did anything, he had to throw his hands in the air and do the two fingers around so everybody knew what was happening.
Unless he was about
I kind of knew what was happening. I didn't need that.
Okay. I hear you.
And then, yeah, Ruckus can flip and fly, but he was a little heavy here, and you can see him getting blown up pretty early in the match.
That was, you know, another part of what made him so impressive to me, too, because it's like, how is anybody doing this? Second off, how is someone in the shape that they're in doing this? And that's what, you know, yeah, again, not 100% perfect or this or that, but, yeah, that extra weight just made it even more impressive for me, but, yeah.
And Jay, as a bigger guy, I agree, right? Because I was looking at it like, that's a lot of... You know, that's a lot of mass moving around and doing stuff that I couldn't dream of doing. So it did make it more impressive.
It's funny, too, because, like, over the years, he had lost some weight, and he had been in, you know, several different shapes, and there was a good amount of people that would straight up say, like, I want the Fat Ruckus back. Like, they preferred the Fat Ruckus.
And Ruckus is a guy that I do know from these days, right, because you'll pop up here and there, and so
yeah.
I know who he is. I've seen his work. Yeah, I've definitely seen the different iterations of him through the time, you know, I can relate, much like me. I've been up and down different times, weight wise. So I completely get it. In this match, the one thing that I did see was he was blown up. You can definitely see it. There's a point where he's on the mat waiting for a Rebel to, you know, probably say some racist stuff to the crowd and then do something. And you can see he's breathing as if he just finished the marathon. And that's okay, because, mm-hmm. again, he got up and he did his stuff. The other part that was interesting for me, and I don't know, I know the commentators made a mention of a mullet that Rebel must have had at one point, but
mm-hmm.
he's playing a Southern gimmick, and to me he looked more like he fit into the ECW FBI than he did a Rebel. So I thought that was... you know, a little off-putting as well. He had more of an Italian look to me than he did a Southern, you know, hillbilly. As we
yeah,
go you know, through this,
ECW.
You know. He did? Okay.
Yeah, like some
yeah,
like,
I don't
out on the dark match or early card stuff. I don't remember actually seeing him there, but I heard a lot of people saying it, you know, over time.
Yeah, he just, to me, like I said, you know, the gimmick looked, not the gimmick, but his look looked more like somebody from the Italian. Had the slick black hair, the mm-hmm. you know, the dark tan. When I think of hillbilly wrestler, right, first off, Hillbilly Jim, but even, you know, bring it to folks that are wrestling a little bit more today in this style, it's the hardcore
yeah,
hillbilly with
hillbilly
Necro Butcher.
Just racist, you know? I think it was more just racist, and, like, whatever goes with racist, that's what he's going to...
That works, yeah. And he, I mean, if that's what he was going for, he pulled it off, because he turned me off within, you know, a couple seconds of talking, and, you know, I was rooting for Ruckus. So if the idea was to make me hate him and to get Ruckus over, that worked. But
yeah.
I don't need to be, you know, borderline offended to get that feeling, right?
Yeah, I hear you.
So, yeah, so Ruckus...
A little side note,
Ruckus.
When mm-hmm. they come out and Rebel has, like, his crew, one of the guys, this will be your first sighting of Chris Cash, because he was one of the guys who was, you know, his crew that just had, like, Rebel's crew or Rebel's army or whatever he called them at the time. And you'd see the little blonde kid that's, like, sitting down at the table next to the ring, and that's Chris Cash.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, he'll be... way more involved in the future, but this is actually his first sighting is on the first show we're reviewing, I should say.
Yeah, I didn't notice, but I'll take a look out for that, because, I know who Chris Cash is,
yeah.
you know, and his story a little bit, but I did not realize that that was him coming out, so I will take a little bit of a look at that next episode and next show. So, you know, Ruckus, again, you know, cartwheel into the backhand spring is phenomenal, right? Whether he's going up and over the top rope to the floor, if he's going into the corner, or if he's just meeting him with the back elbow, right, the Tajiri-style back elbow, You know, he does it. He does it extremely well. So very interested to see how Ruckus builds and grows, because this is one of his early matches, at least for CZW. So really interested as we go forward to see what becomes of Ruckus and how he, you know, he becomes more of a star in the promotion.
For sure.
With the match, right, it was a match. And then there was a low blow into the Bisquick bucket, lariat pin, you know. Again, for some reason, Rebel decides he's going to go on the mic again. He then throws a fireball in the face of Ruckus. Ruckus never gets the revenge, as I said before, so it comes off even more poorly with the racist BS, right? It just came off really, really poorly because Ruckus never got that opportunity to get his revenge. Even if he gets it next show, it doesn't do it for me, right? I needed him to get it tonight. While that was happening, for it to be even remotely passable as entertainment. So for me, you know, kind of happy this was over, not because of Ruckus, but due to I was just done with this Rockin' Rebel character, and you know, didn't want to see him on my screen anymore. So that was a 15-minute, you know, 15 minutes of please get off my screen. Again, very cool with some of the Ruckus moves, especially that flip off the wall, but Rockin' Rebel is not for me, that's for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I thought was really stupid that they did is that Bisquick spot, man, the rest of the show, that is what the map looks like. Like, the rest of the show, because you needed to involve Bisquick, like, the chicken and whatever else he had in there wasn't racist enough. Bisquick needed to be in the ring. It's like they must have probably washed that mat like five times to get the Bisquick off of it just because this one racist angle in the middle of the card. It was like, come on, guys. You know.
And every time they did, I hope they were – yeah, and every time they did, I hope they were feeding Rockin' Rebel the biscuits they were making as they were trying to get it off the mat. And again, starting the next match, you know, that is the first note that I have here. And now the mat's all white from the Bisquick and – you know, again, distracting, right? You when you're watching, you don't want to be distracted by these little things, but they are distracting at times.
Sure. Yeah, so the next match is the Briscoe Brothers versus the SAT of Amazing Red and Joel Maximo, where the SAT will usually be the two Maximos and sometimes Amazing Red added to it, but this iteration of them will be Amazing Red and Joel Maximo. And, you know, it's very interesting with watching the Briscoes at this show, at this juncture, because they are 16 and 17 years old when you're watching them here.
So I was going to ask that. They clearly look young. They clearly were not the gimmick they are, or not they anymore, but unfortunately, right. But the gimmick that they became, they're clearly, you know, just coming into the business, and their attire definitely showed that. However, you know, I thought they did some really good things in the ring. You know, I thought there was some really, really crisp spots. Yeah, they missed the ending, and again, we'll dive into it a little bit here. So, you know, Maximo and Red come out first. Dewey Donovan and Briscoes come out next. Briscoes look so young, right? The announcers had their first decent comment of the night. I know we're talking more about the show, but I'm watching it with announcers. So, you know, for me, they had the first decent comment of the night. If the Briscoes lose, they can always go work at the body shop in Florida. That did pop me a little bit. You know.
So what is your overall thoughts? And hit that for a minute. What is your overall thoughts on the commentators? Because I got to tell you, for years of me watching CZW and then watching the DVDs and the tapes and all of that stuff, I was heavily annoyed by the commentary. And then years later, I learned to appreciate it so much because the same reason I told you about the way the workers would believe it and the fans would believe it, the commentators made you believe that this was the most important thing that was going on right now. They weren't really like finding ways to tie it to TV every minute, and oh yeah, just like on Raw, or they were really so locked in to Justice Payne is going to get this guy, or Mondo is the worst person on the planet, or you know, like they really committed to their portrayal of I hate this guy, I like this guy. I just think it helps sell the product so much more. And man, if you go forward now and you try to find commentators like that, good luck. Not off of TV.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think obviously they're not Gorilla and Jesse or anybody of that caliber, but for what they're doing, right? For put it in the same context of other promotions that are around now. They're a solid commentary crew for what it is, because there are some shows that I watch now where, I have to turn it off or I have to just mute it because it's bad. This wasn't bad. There was a few moments throughout where I don't remember. I think it was actually a Trent Acid match later on in the show where the one commentator, and I don't know their names yet, but I'm sure I will eventually hear, kept saying, well, you've never been in the ring. Oh, you've never been in the ring. So there was some fine-tuning, obviously, that has to happen or that hopefully does happen. But overall, I thought the commentary was good. They get excited. They get into it. They let you know why things are happening. They try to tie it together in the story, and I really like that. I really like that they do try to keep the storylines, involved in this. Because if not, it becomes just two guys beating the hell out of each other, and I don't know why. And I for me to really get into and really invest my time, I need to know, what these people are fighting over. And it could be, the dumbest reason in the world, but as long as there's a reason, I can get behind it. When it's just, let's go out there and have a match, there's a place for that, but not every match can be like that. I find today's wrestling to be that sometimes, where it's just, these two guys are just going to see who's the better competitor. That doesn't work for me all the time.
Right. It's craziness and it's convenient, too, because as a booker, too, this falls in so much with, the card subject to change stuff. When you don't have to really book a storyline and expect everybody to show up, because that happens a lot. A lot of storylines are completely burnt because the guy that was supposed to show up in this storyline no-showed or, something, and now you got to rewrite something to, and these guys aren't all that smart. A lot of these guys, they're like, fucking whatever, just have them wrestle the other guy. I don't know. So then if they get into the pattern of doing just like, this guy versus that guy, I think the fans will like it. Even if that can't be done, okay, well, we'll just do this guy versus that guy. And now you don't have to come up with a reason why, even though that's obviously the right way to go about it. I just think that's the way it's become.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's the way it's become. And again, there's a spot for everything, right? It's the old theory of wrestling, right? There has to be a little bit for everybody. So, you want to give me two legends with no real storyline, I can deal with that, right? I can understand why, this 20-year vet wants to fight this 20-year vet and they've never had a match, or the last time they fought was 15 years ago when they were both, just breaking in. That's enough of a story for me. But, there needs to be something to get my interest in why is this guy about to, throw this guy outside the ring onto eight chairs if they're shaking hands before and after the match.
Yeah. No, there was nothing more that I could hear, and I heard it a lot of times over the years in CZW. We would hear just little rumblings because the internet wasn't so hot like it is now, and you would just hear little rumblings amongst people in the crowd and shit. Hey, this guy really doesn't fucking like this guy because such and such happened at another show. And then when those two guys come out, you are at the edge of your seat because, you're waiting for a motherfucker to lay in a shot, a little harder than usual. And, I think he dropped him on his head just there. And, and you could just kind of, that whole thing, now you're invested because you feel he really doesn't like that guy. Just the aura of that, the belief that might have some reality to it. It immediately sold me into a match so much more, where now it's like, oh, no, he really, went overtime telling everyone how much of a friend this guy is to him, and he can't wait to wrestle him, and yep.
Yeah, I'll tie that together for me, right? Not to talk about current stuff, but you know, the two folks that do that for me right now are Slack and Dr. Redacted, right? Those two, on different ways, but Slack, it looks to me like he wants to kill everybody, and he doesn't like anybody, and this might just get real, right? This might just turn into a real shoot in the middle of the ring, and I will watch any match you put in front of me with him, right, especially live on different the different providers, because to me, it's Slack, like, oh, shit, Slack's what's going to happen?
Slack's an absolute throwback. He knows it. He's violent. He portrays everything he is. The guy is as advertised. Look at him. You know, he jumps off the page. He's a cartoon character, you know?
Absolutely. He's one of the guys that, you know, comic book character. He's one of the guys you don't want to meet in a dark alley, no matter who you are, right? Like, I'm just going to go on the other side of the street. It's just probably a little bit better of an idea. And that's what you want. And then Dr. Yep. Redacted, for me, is not the same as Slack, but for him, it's that you know, Brian Pillman loose cannon is that crazy, like, you know, I'm sure it's a gimmick, I'm sure it's an act, but I can buy into this dude's out of his mind. This dude might just try something that is going to end really, really poorly. This guy might, you know, do something that we've never seen before. So he's another one that, you know, if I see he's on a show and it's live, I'm absolutely looking to tune in just to see what's going to happen with him. So that's the stuff that when I'm watching, I need that, or it's just two guys or two girls or a guy and a girl, however the match is set up, in there, you know, working together to try to entertain me, and it becomes more Circus del Soleil than it does wrestling for me.
Sure.
You know, I think understand. That stuff's cool when they do that, you know, and I go see them on the circus, that's cool. But if I'm watching wrestling, I want the storyline behind it to let me know why this guy is looking to hurt this other guy.
Right. Yeah, and I think
so,
this is we'll get into him later. But let's go back into this match here. The Briscoes and the SAT.
Yeah, so, you know, it was a sloppy start with a couple sloppy sequences with Red being alley-ooped up to the top, you know, and then drop-kicked into a front flip onto his partner. It turned out well, but there was a couple bobbles in there. But then they kind of, you know, caught it, and they were able to bring it back in until one of the Briscoes, and I don't know which one it was, goes up to the top rope and does that front flip, and absolutely nobody catches him. And that was just brutal, brutal splat, it looked like to me. Nobody even remotely caught him. But he was able, again, to get back up somehow and get back into the ring. So, you know, kudos to whichever one of the Briscoes that was that decided to do the front flip into the floor, and not any fault of his own. Clearly the other guys missed their mark on that one. And then for me, the best move of the night so far was the Briscoe springboard off the top rope into a nice super kick. That was the first, you know, the first, okay, that looked good. That looked clean. Again, the ruckus flip was great. Don't get me wrong. But that looked good. That looked like a TV spot to me.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that, you know, you see a lot when you're watching indie matches is they don't talk enough to each other. So the same spot as the three-way match with the side slam leg drop that happened in the three-way match earlier with Dahmer and Jeff Rocker and, you know, Fast Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was a little bit of, I seen it. It looked much better here. But, again, I seen it the match before, maybe, you know, two matches before. So, you know, I wish the guys would talk a little bit more in the back of, hey, this is a spot I'm going to do so that I don't
see
it 16 times throughout the night.
Stuff, yeah.
And then the clotheslines in this match were stiff all match long, right? They definitely were throwing them in. So I like that, right? I do like that stronger style. I do like where it looks, you know, it looks real. It feels real. you look at yourself, you look at your screen, and you're like, damn, that hurt. Probably because it did, but that's a part of doing this and entertaining the folks. I know it's 25 years ago, but both the teams' attire here were terrible. Right? They looked like shit, quite frankly. You had the Briscoes in singlets that looked like they borrowed them from their older brothers. You had Amazing Red and Maximo and red cutoff T-shirts that, again, I understand 25 years ago this was more the style, but looked like, again, six sizes too big. Red can fly.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about, the attire? Does that even matter to you, Jay?
Well, no, it does, but I don't know. They kind of came off as, red prison jumpsuit kind of deal with the airbrush shit on it. But, they were the Spanish announce team, so it's not like they looked like an announce team. So, but they stuck with that for a while, and I just took that as that's how the SAT looks. It's just, if there's three of them, they all wear the same shit. Whatever it is, it is. The Briscoes, they had that, we're high school wrestlers, and now we do this. And that's, how they looked. And, in the vein of, the Kurt Angle and, those amateur wrestler kind of, that's what they were, just younger and then getting into CZW. So, yeah, it wasn't a great long-term look whatsoever. But, you see some people enter wrestling, especially on the indie level, and that's their gimmick, the Shelton Benjamins, the Charlie Haas's, these guys, they just go with that collegiate wrestling look as their look. I've seen a handful of them over here, Drew Gulak, there's a lot of them that came up, and they just said, well, until we find what comes next, we'll just be amateur wrestlers.
Yeah, and I can appreciate that for the guys that you named, because I think the difference between them and the Briscoes, and maybe it would have worked better for me with the Briscoes, if they did any amateur moves. There was not one amateur move thrown into the whole mix. So
right.
it didn't make me feel like, oh, these guys have a real background in wrestling, the
right.
Greco-Roman wrestling and whatnot. So I get it. And, Gulak definitely portrayed that. And some of the others that wore that attire, the Steiner brothers, another one, right? Even though they had, power moves and everything else, they would still mat grapple. Again, we're watching this 25 years in the future. So I also know what the Briscoes started to wear afterwards. And I was looking for that look as well.
Very well. Yeah.
And the secondary piece for the Spanish announce team, this is the first time I've seen them, right. That I can think of. So I don't know that they wear the same thing every week, and it works for them as they continue to wear it. But the first time laying my eyes on it, that was a part of the match that I noticed, took a note of it because it did look very substandard or lower than what I wanted it to for the moves that they were doing. I think overall, Red can fly, right? But he is on the smaller end.
He's tiny.
But he played to that well.
Yeah. And, when you see that standing star press, he's the first guy that did that. When you see that code Red – a bunch of different things that's been called. He invented that. This guy, the innovation that came out of some guys like the Amazing Red and stuff like that back then, it was just incredible. And now everyone does it, and it's just like dime a dozen. Everyone's doing the code Reds and off the ropes, off of here, off of there. But that was his stuff. So, it was really cool to be there firsthand as you saw these things for the first time and just go what the hell did he just do? This isn't, on TV, saw for the 18th time, there's another one of those. You just saw this guy take flight and do things that you just never saw a human do before. So it was exciting.
Yeah, and I agree. Like I said, he definitely can fly. And he uses his size actually to his advantage. He doesn't try to do moves that weren't in his skill—not even skill set, but size set. Right? He's not looking to F5 anybody. He's not looking to gorilla press anybody. Right? He was hit and move, flying all over the place. And I think this match was good. You can definitely you can definitely tell, because we can see the future, that you know, there's people in this match that have a good future, and you could see it here early on. We talked about the announcers before. They made, you know, they made reference to this being a very early match for both teams. So you can see there was something there, and you know, I enjoyed this match. Yeah. Definitely enjoyed it. Unfortunately, at the end, Dewey interferes. So we have four matches now, four interferences. The second side slam, leg drop, double team, like I said before. The Briscoes made a comeback. Not sure how it happened. It just kind of happened, which was, again, interesting. I think Maximo hit one of the Briscoes, couldn't tell them apart. And then next thing I know, the Briscoe was making a comeback with no real, like, move to stop him, which I think there was a miss there. And then the Briscoes won. Dewey helped, but then the Briscoes were mad, and I don't know why they were mad. So I'm interested in where that story goes, right? Is that going to be a theme, or, you know, was that just a one-off? So I'm definitely interested to see where the Briscoes and the Dewey Donovan piece go.
Yeah, for sure. So, okay, we got four matches to go in about 50-something minutes left, 53 minutes left. So we just got to keep it tight and keep rolling. Next one we got is Rick Blade, Super Crazy, and Nick Mondo in a three-way ladder match.
We sure did. So Mondo looks like a wrestler, would fit in these days. More work, mic work, so a little bit too much mic work on the night for me. I don't need every wrestler to get on the microphone. Yeah. Super Crazy comes out next. Blade comes out third. Blade looks okay, but the hair was throwing me off a little bit there, and it wasn't the style. It was the I'm going bald trying to keep it look that was making it a little bit tough for me.
And his point is
definitely, you know, definitely thinning out a little quickly, and probably could have done something a little different because he had – you know, everything else. He just didn't have that. He was one of the first besides Super Crazy and Tajiri that came out and actually did something on their entrance other than walk to the ring. And again, I like that stuff. I like the you know, getting into character and getting into what you are. I didn't know it was a ladder match at first. So, you know, from the commentator side, that would have helped me because there was no ladder in sight. And then all of a sudden it was a ladder match. They started out with a nice little set of, you know, some flips and different, you know, gymnastics moves. And I mean that in the most complimentary of ways. So it started out in that way. Cool sunset flip, belly to back. I thought that was really, really innovative. Again, don't know if it's the first person or first group to do it, but it was a cool spot. Mondo dives. Again, another international sign for flippy shit. I wish all wrestlers would stop doing that. I know when you climb to the top rope that you're going to flip and you're going to do stuff. I don't need you to throw your fingers in the air like you're trying to speed bag the smallest speed bag in the world. Go do your move.
A lot of times you'll notice it's best to buy time so they fail on it. You know what I mean? Where it's like, you know, the villain going, I'm about to take Batman out. And, you know, it's like they do this to the crowd. They're like, stop telling us. Just do it. You know, like. That's, I think, what it's supposed to build, but, you know, yeah, they do it a lot.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. So some crazy dives here, right? Definitely some crazy dives. You know, Mondo dove, Blade dove, chairs and ladders are in the ring, surfboard into a botched ladder spot. So what's your thought on when that happens, right? Because it's going to happen. Do you think they should keep going with the spot, or do you think they should play off the slip and you know, not so much do the same thing again, but play into it and be a little bit more creative in the moment? What are your thoughts there?
Well, it's tough because this was obviously, you know, an ECW guy with a CZW guy in there. Mondo does not pull off the his end of the surfboard. And instead of just, I don't even know what to do, because at that point you've already committed to doing the move and now it's just not going to be done. So he jumps into the ladder and makes it look kind of silly because, like, we saw it didn't work. Why are you doing that? And then, you know, Crazy just kind of shrugs his shoulders like, not my fuck up. So, like, again, this is just kind of miscommunication between the two. Didn't work out. Neither one of them wants to, like, cop to it, and they're just like, screw it, let's go. You know, it's just one of those things, a botch, and it's going to look like how it's going to look like, you know, and you just hope you don't keep botching. You know, you got to pull it together after that as if it didn't happen almost, you know.
And I think they did. And then interestingly, to me, I think Trent Acid botches later on with the chair spot. But he plays it off well, right? He plays it off as if his head still hit the one chair, you know, and it, to me, right, he played it off and he you know, he kind of adapted to what it was. He didn't, you know, he didn't sell his back because clearly his back didn't hit the chairs. He sold his head, which made sense to me.
Right.
But back over to this match, right? So Mondo double-crossed the Super Crazy after telling him to do the moonsault. That was decent. Avalanche suplex powerbomb spot off the ladder looked really good. You know, again, you got to put yourself in that time frame. When we look at it now, you're like, everybody does that. Oh, they're doing that, you know, every week on AEW. But at this time frame, that was innovative right there to come from the other side of the ladder up and over.
Absolutely.
I did like that a lot. Blade sets up the ladder on the chairs outside the ring. There's a swanton. You know, he put Super Crazy on the ladder, did a swanton. However, the ladder survived. Just a side note, I dialed 609-848-6778, which is on the apron, and that number is out of service. So any of the listeners that may go back and watch this episode, the number is out of service. It said, you know, contact Combat Zone Wrestling right on the apron. So I said, what the hell, I'll give it a call, see if some, you know, see who answers.
I'm sure they have an updated number if you really want to get a hold of them, but I mean, I don't.
No, I'm good. I just figured in the moment I was just going to take a quick break. I wanted to give a call to see who answered, and I was just going to ask them if they were CZW.
Okay.
Yeah. So leg drop on the ladder by Ric Blade. The chair is right next to him. So this is one of the things that maybe I go a little too far into the realism. If I got a chair right next to the guy and I'm not going to do a flip into the ladder to hurt myself, I'm just going to pick up the chair and hit him with it. So either kick the chair out of the ring or put it, I don't know, do something with it because it just looks a little silly that I have this object that I can beat you up with and I'm going to put my body at risk to probably cause less pain than the actual hitting the person with the chair would have. But again, that may be me where I go a little too much into, I want this to be realistic, because it did look good. You know, Mondo pinned both Blade, or sorry, Mondo was pinned by both Blade and, Super Crazy, and they both won. That was odd.
Before you get to that, I mean, I just got to point out that, and this is not the first or last time that Mondo did this, but the backdrop Mondo took from the inside of the ring to just him and the ladder on the floor. I mean, I don't even know how you continue to be a human going forward. I don't know, like, screw the rest of the match. Screw what's going on Tuesday. Like, I mean, it's just like my weekend's ruined. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, seeing that type of thing live was like, okay, what am I missing? Because, like, they don't do this on WWE where they just use a ladder in the floor. They use, like, three guys to spot them, or there's, like, a crowd. There's, like, a box with air in it or something. You know, there's not, like, just the ladder in the floor. Like, how does this guy okay? And, he's just, like, that's one of his things.
Yeah, the backdrop out of the ring onto the ladder it's a crazy spot to even try. You know, even if you were in the ring to do a backdrop onto the ladder, I'm not looking forward to doing that anytime in my life. Throw in the fact that you're now, whatever it is, 4 feet higher or whatever, over the top rope onto that ladder. I'm definitely good. I feel the same way. I don't know how he got up from that, but he did quickly. He got pinned off of it, which again was good. You know, I am conscious of the time and the amount of time of the show here, but one of the things that really, really stuck out to me in this, going back 25 years, not many false finishes.
Yeah.
When the match was supposed to end, it ended. And I like that. Right?
Well,
it definitely, you know, it definitely was different.
Everybody trying to top everybody, show after show after show, finishes became mid-match moves. They just became transitional moves that used to be the killer. So, you know, that's what happened is over the years, the indies just outdid itself and oversaturated itself where it's like, how do you outdo this? And, you know, I always said, too, because people will call me a hater for expecting a certain thing or saying, hey, like, well, you just put on this match, but, like, last month you guys did, like, way over-the-top stuff. So if I say this match was just, okay, I'm a hater, but you guys set the...
It's a great point, right? And it was refreshing to see, you know, after Mondo took that ridiculous bump onto the floor, that he got pinned because that's what should happen. if this was, you know, actually, you know, a fight and somebody tossed somebody like that, they're not getting up from it. So that's absolutely what should have happened. I thought it was the right finish minus the very odd, you know, both people won. Again, now if they set this up for next show, okay, great. But they really didn't because Mondo, again, another guy gets on the mic, which this case he needed to, but because so many other people did, I at first got a little like, oh, here we go again. So he gets on the mic and sets up a barbed wire ladder match for next show. So interested to see where that goes. Yeah, so 15 minutes, good action. Really enjoyed this match. There were some crazy spots. I thought it was good.
All right. So next match, we got Trent Acid versus Nick Burke.
Yeah, so Acid comes out first. Looks good. So now I haven't seen Trent Acid at this point. I think I've seen a couple things. I think I actually watched the tribute show at one point. And they had some highlights or whatnot. So, you know, for me, he looks like a wrestler, but now can he go in the ring, right? So fast start, good punches by both. Best punches of the night were definitely here. Both guys, again, looked like they were connecting. It didn't look, you know, as if they were pulling punches. And Acid sells. And I like that, right? Acid definitely sold everything. Damn, that toss into the chairs followed by the toss into the chairs was incredibly good. Unfortunately, Burke followed it up with a Hollywood Hogan chair shot just didn't hit the spot. But the toss was tough. Sunset flip to the floor. Once again, kind of like the spot with the ladder. You know, I'm not the one raising my hand to do a sunset flip onto the floor. There's too much risk on that one. That looked like it hurt because it probably did. Acid landed on his elbow very awkwardly and, again, was able to get up and keep going. One of the funnier moments in the show and probably the best mic work of the night was when Acid did a moonsault to the outside and he keeps rolling over and the fan screams at him, "You kicked me in the balls, you asshole," which was, again, probably the best mic work of the night that wasn't meant to be mic work. So that was that definitely popped me. Acid's flunky comes up to the apron with the chair. This looked terrible. Jay, I don't know if you caught this or not, but Burke just casually walks over, kicks him and just takes the chair from him. I mean, no fight, nothing happens. He's just like, "Oh, you got a chair? Thanks. Hold on, I'm going to take that from you." Walks over, just gives him a kick to the midsection and takes the chair. So I don't know why the guy had the chair and wasn't ready to use it. So that looked bad, but Acid ducks and then punches the chair. Acid then sets up some chairs. Thank you to Trent Acid for no international sign for flippy shit. And I like Acid. I not just because he didn't do the international sign, also because I thought he had a very strong match here. Especially he was pushed off the ropes into the chair, and like I said, this is where he came up short, but he stayed down and still sold it in a way that looked believable. Burke then hit a pretty nice frog splash. Acid hits a backpack driver or whatever they're calling it at the time. Acid goes to the top. Burke shoves him about 20 feet into the fifth row. So another crazy, crazy spot where, you know, you got a human being flying through the air into you know, the crowd and, you know, everything that could be down there on the ground. So I thought that was really good. But then it started to lose it. And it wasn't the wrestlers. It was the storyline of the match. At this point, I finally figured out that he only had 10 minutes, and it sure felt like more than 10 already. And then we went to the back over by the by what I was calling the batting cages or the soccer field or whatever it is.
Yeah.
There's a mom, another cool little TV piece. There was a mom that was wrangling up her young kid that looked like she was scared to death of what was happening. I don't think she quite understood what wrestling show she was taking her kids to, but she damn sure wrangled them quick, and then she was gone. Acid bomb off the bleachers onto a table, but there was no ref. So this ref, and I don't know his name, obviously, was also about as good as the flunky that Acid brought to the ring with him, because he had a couple spots in this match that he ruined for them, right? So you had no count, you had nothing. The commentators did a great job of trying to explain it off, saying, oh, this match needs to finish in the ring. But then it got into this weird spot where they decided to, like, carry him to the ring, and it took well over a minute in this 10-minute time limit. He gets into the ring, and, of course, he kicks out because it just took you, you know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes to bring him around and then pin him.
Yeah.
This is where those Fuck Whitmer shirts were, Whitman shirts were. So we talked about that earlier. And then Burke reverses the crucifix driver or razor's edge. And then 2 seconds before the three count, the bell rings. Burke acts for 5 more minutes. The flunky then accepts for acid, which, okay. But they didn't pay that off in any way. So hopefully they pay that off later. Good series of reversals with the near falls. I thought that was solid. You know, the back and forth and, you know, I'm gonna roll you up, you're gonna roll me up. I thought that came off pretty good. And then again, there was a ref bump, and the ref missed this spot as well. He bumped like he was dead, and then he was up 2 seconds later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Acid hits his tumbleweed leg drop on the chair. So for me, and gets the pin. To me, this was the best match so far. Acid is good. But the 10 minutes was over way before the 10 minutes was over. So the story was not executed well, but the wrestling was very good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Trent Acid, he got everything, you know. I mean, when you watch him over time, you're just going to see that he was just a star beyond his years. And, you know, he would be an absolute TV star today on, you could pick the company. It doesn't matter. I mean, he's that charismatic. He knows when to sell. He knows when to draw the fans in. He knows when to push him away. He knows when to stall and piss him off. He knows when to play the chicken shit heel. He really just had it. He just had it. And it's the best way to put it because, again, like, you know, he's not the best high flyer. He's not the best striker. He's not the best, but he just could do it all. You know?
And yeah, and you can see it right off the bat. Yeah, you could see it, right? And like I said, even when he first came out, just the way he walked to the ring, you know, he looked like a star. He felt like a star. It was one of the people, you know, and I know a little bit about him, right? I'm not gonna play coy here and pretend I've never heard who Trent Acid is, but I don't know his work, right? As a whole, so you know, he was one of the ones along with the Briscoe brothers. That I put the little star next to, right? Ruckus is another one that I want to see where this goes and how they project him up the card.
Yeah. The other cool thing about Trent, too, is I remember somewhere in interviews, Seth Rollins has actually mentioned that one of his inspirations and one of the people that he watched and studied all the time was Trent. And now when you watched Seth and you continue to watch Trent, you'll see the parallels. It's the charisma and just the showboating, and you could see certain mannerisms that you're like, oh, I see where that came from. It's really cool. You know, years later, you see little sprinklings of tributes and just, you know, things that were derived from Trent Acid's game back in the day.
And that's going to be great, because I love those little Easter eggs that, you know, that you see, whether it's in wrestling, whether it's in music, you know, or different things when people put those little bits in movies, right? I enjoy that. So definitely going to pay attention to that and see where some of the things that Seth Rollins currently does, you know, tie in.
Yeah. So the next match is a wild one. It's a CZW Iron Man title five-way match. Has all sorts of people in it. You got Lobo, Lord Everett DeVore, Madman Pondo, Nate Hatred, and the Wife Beater. And, yeah, this was a match that, again, you know, going to see live, first time ever CZW, I had no idea. This was not, like, advertised, even if there was hardcore or something or other Iron Man. I don't know what the hell that means. I don't know what their Iron Man title is. Well, apparently that's like their hardcore title. And there's all these guys. I don't know who any of these people are. So when that final spot happened with the fucking fire inside the building with the tables and the barbed wire, I was like, I mean, just completely in awe, because I'm like, I don't even know what the fuck just happened. I mean, you could just see the like building light up in that little area where the fire was, and I was towards the back of the crowd. I wasn't a front row guy right off the bat, but it was just like, whoa. And you know, Pondo with the stop sign—that's a real stop sign. I mean, that's legitimately like unscrew it from the corner up at the corner, and then just start beating people in the head with it. Like it's—you could tell when they're, you know, right in front of you in the ring, and you're like, oh, that's not like a tin sign or something. It's insane, you know, like I just never saw this before. So it was first time ever. Now I've seen it a million times, but first time ever, it was pretty shock and awe kind of stuff.
I can imagine, right? So, you know, first thing they bring out is these barbed wire tables, and then they start, you know, building some Lincoln Log set of, you know, tables on top of tables, the titles hanging from the roof, you know, camera shot may be good, maybe bad. You didn't really notice that perch there, so you're like, how the hell are these guys going to get, you know, up to the roof to grab that title? Yeah, I mean, the you know, you knew you were in for something. I didn't know what, but I did know there was going to be some definite brutality in this. And all of these guys that came out, even with Lord Everett DeVore's gimmick, you know, they all look like they should be wrestling this type of style, right? So I appreciated that. You know, Lobo, big guy, you know, that kind of dark, grungy dude, Wife Beaters, you know, in good shape and just looks, you know, looks like he's, you know, got a screw loose, got a good name as well. You know, Nate Hatred, another good name. He, you know, he's another guy that, you know, if I'm walking down the street, I'm probably just going to go to the other side of the street just because, you know, no real reason to interact. Pondo, you know, another big dude. And then, like I said, the Lord Everett DeVore, while, you know, I'm not into the frills and wigs, you know, he had some size. So I'm just going to break down the match real quick, and we'll get to that ending if that's okay. So Lobo comes out first. You know, Nate Hatred comes out with a barbed wire trash can. You know, like I said a second ago, Hatred was a big, scary guy. I liked the look. Hatred did try a tilt-a-whirl side slam and almost dropped Lobo on his head. At that point, you know, bad timing. One for the move. Also, you know, this is where Wife Beater's music comes on, but you're kind of still watching. Is Lobo going to get up? He just got dropped on his neck. Next thing you know, Wife Beater's out there. So at that point, I wrote here, I guess this is a gauntlet match. Wasn't quite understanding where we were going. Then Lord Everett comes out, mystery opponent, and did he get any offense in this match at all? Because it just seemed like he got his ass kicked, which is definitely different for a mystery opponent to come in, you know, and they're saying it's from the boss, and he just got his ass kicked every time he was in the ring.
Well, yeah, well, the gimmick was Zandig phoned in putting Lord Everett DeVore in the match to kind of screw the match over and just put this guy who no one cared about in the match. So he was supposed to just get destroyed by the guys who belonged in it. And that's when Justice Payne, who was the opposition to Zandig, who was in Japan at the time, said, oh, no, you're not going to get away with that. I got somebody for this match. And that's when he put Pondo in it.
Okay, so that all makes sense. Again, the mic work is a little hard to understand what's going on,
right.
Just based off the sound quality. So if that was what DeVore was there for, he did a hell of a job because he got his ass kicked the entire time.
You know what's funny?
Yeah, and
you know, post-match, he tries to call out, you know, hey, Pondo, you know, we'll see. Try to do that to me again next time or whatever, and they just beat the shit out of him. That match was never booked. That was not – he didn't get his comeuppance. It was no – like, I almost think that was just, like, his idea in the moment. They were like, no, you were only booked for this here.
Yeah, because he did. He got beat up again. The staple gun, again, I don't know, you know, if this is early with the staple gun, but the staples – a bag of chips to Wavebeater's head. Again, not something I'm looking forward to. I'm not raising my hand if that's the spot they're asking. It sounds and look like it would hurt. And then there were some dollar bills stuck to his head. Everybody's bleeding. Everybody's bleeding badly. Hatred takes a bump from the top rope to the floor through the chairs. That made me literally wince at first. That was the other move by Fast Eddie. Looked bad. This one actually made me pull my head away for a second, because you can see as he was twisting in the air that he wasn't going to make it all the way over, and he had those chairs there. That was a scary one, but once again, credit where credit's due. He was right back up and right back on the top rope a couple seconds later. DeVore tries to pin. So again, maybe that was his gimmick of being dumb, but he tries a pin in the middle of a ladder match. Awkward. Didn't come across well on TV. It made it look really bad. You know, they're just bleeding like stuck pigs. I mean, everybody's just got blood flowing everywhere. Wavebeater and Pondo suplex from the ring to the floor through 8 to 10 chairs. Absolutely brutal. Lobo and Wavebeater go up to the perch, and Wavebeater press slams Lobo into the flaming barbed wire tables. You know, if you're listening and you haven't seen this, this is well worth going back to look at. Lobo grabs the belt and wins. However, they can't get him off the damn tables because of the barbed wire, and it gets uncomfortable for a second.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost as if they didn't know that was going to happen. Like, the unpreparedness of, like, you know, getting to the front of the line and then you start looking for your wallet kind of unpreparedness. Like, what were you about to, I mean, they're like, I don't know. I didn't think about the barbed wire keeping them there. Oh, shit. Yeah,
I never understand why they don't have a fire extinguisher. It's like, again, you're not throwing away the illusion when you see somebody set a table on fire that you have a security guard kind of run over with a fire extinguisher. I don't know why that's not just a part of the spot. There was a guy, and he might have been a fan in the crowd, that tried to dump a little water on him. I'm not sure that was putting out the whole fire, but definitely got uncomfortable. And then the fight continued. So I don't know, you know, how burned up Lobo was, but he seemed to sit in that fire long enough that it probably got him pretty good.
Yeah.
But then he had to finish the aftermath and the aftermatch brawl. A little bit of a again.
Into this aftermatch brawl is when we get our first glimpse of Nick Gage. Now, at the time, I didn't know who the fuck Nick Gage was. So he's just a guy in a hat and a t-shirt. It looks like he's just some guy to one of the fans or someone from the – I mean, I don't know who he is. And he's just got on, like, regular person gear, and he's just – his shirt says Hardcore Nick Sucks or something, and it's just like, I don't – he hates Hardcore Nick, but he's Hardcore Nick, so I don't fucking know. You know, and he's just, like, fighting. So this is our first actual glimpse of Nick Gage starting where we're starting.
Yeah, so – he comes out to the aid of Lobo, it looks like. And to your point, I didn't know, because Lobo looked fucked up, right, in this moment. Like, you can see his eyes are kind of just going all over the place. Like, he's definitely, you know, still checking to see if everything's still where it's supposed to be. So I thought the same thing, you know, from the angle. It was from the back. I didn't know who it was. I thought it was a fan just kind of helping him get to the back or whatever and picking up the belt for him. And then they get into the ring, and Lobo attacked Ward Everett. I don't think he was supposed to be in the ring right here to get him out of the ring. And then Gage attacks Lobo. So, you know, a little story, you know, mismatch for me again. You just helped them. Was it, you know, was that supposed to happen, or was Lobo kind of out of sorts and Gage was trying to help him, you know, in keeping with what they were supposed to do? Is it one of those moments where Lobo was just out of it and Gage had to, you know, had to get to the important part and or what? So I don't know what that was, but that was definitely interesting. Again, the commentators did a really nice job of covering that and, you know, saying how, you know, this is Nick Gage, he'll attack anybody at any time type deal. So they played it off well. Gage definitely looks a little bigger. Not going to say he was fat, but he definitely had a puffy face at the time.
Absolutely.
So, you know, before he might have started doing some other things to help him lose weight. And then, you know, Lobo comes back in.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again, Jay.
Yeah. No, I mean, the thing about Gage is, you know, he did have a little bit more weight on him. That was always how he was shaped. His brother was Justice Payne, and Justice always had the more athletic, you know, physical build. You know, he got on the substances a little sooner. And Gage was never a substance guy that way. You know, he went the negative substance or whatever you want to call it later on. But
performance enhancing.
Right, he wasn't enhancing anything. But Gage's intensity, his aggression, Gage was probably consistently over the time, especially, you know, with the passing of Trent Acid and everything else, over time was probably my favorite CZW wrestler because his intensity and his aggression was just unmatched. You really believed he hated everybody fucking there, and even if they were friends, when it came to inside of that ring, he was just going to hurt people. And, man, it got me charged up because you really, again, you got that fight feel out of Nick Gage.
Definitely, like we talked about earlier with Slack, he's another one that falls into that category, even still today, you know, especially after the David Arquette incident, right? You watch him, it's a little of the Howard Stern piece you watch because you don't know what's going to happen next, and he definitely gives you that impression that you just don't know what's going to happen next, even to this day.
Well, I do disagree with that part of it because I believe the Gage post-prison, post-second stay in prison, I could see through it. He lives on catchphrases. He's like, you know, those pep rallies and shit. That's what it just comes off like a pep rally. He just repeats the same catchphrases. He's just a watered-down version of himself that the aggression isn't there anymore. The life is gone. I mean, the substances that he's unfortunately fell victim to has taken a whole lot out of him over the years. So, and again, you'll see a lot more of this as we go and the difference between today's Nick Gage. This isn't me just hating because, again, I loved this guy for so long as far as his performances and just that was what I look forward to on so many cards. And you'll see the difference.
Yeah, because I don't think I picked up Nick Gage until the pandemic when I started getting into the deathmatch wrestling stuff, and I didn't really go back in history. Just, you know, as we were kind of locked away in our houses, I needed something to pass the time, so I started watching that started coming back on, and that was, you know, definitely later after the prison sentences and whatnot. So interesting, interested to see the Nick Gage. The one thing that I do, you know, even to this day think that is a move that I still can't understand how it's worked is the boot scrape through like a pane of glass. Like it gets me every time. I still don't understand where he's not, you know, that shards of glass are not hitting somebody in the eye. So, you know, he's still got some stuff that definitely does it for me.
Yeah, he hit one on Necro one time with the pane of glass in front of him, and it hit just right or wrong, however you want to put it. But the glass, I guess, carried with his boot and just took like a shred of skin off of Necro's chest, just like a vagina across his one peck. It was like, whoa, that's it can go that way.
Absolutely. And again, Lobo looked like he was out of it because then they fought to the back and it looked like Gage was carrying that whole thing to me. So, you know, interested to see, a week later what happens next week with Lobo and, you know, how he comes out and what happens.
Yeah. And you'll notice, too, Lobo, the best comparison that, you know, I've heard and used for him over the years as a CZW fan was he is CZW's Mankind. He's Mick Foley in CZW. I mean, that's just his role. He is just a bump machine. He's a shorter little guy, but he plays a heel for the majority of the time. I don't think he was at the time there, but and yeah, he's just the guy that, like, he takes the bumps upon bumps, and you're like, whoa, like, he survived a lot of things that I was just like, that's just flat out incredible, because he's not built like an athlete. He's built like a shorter guy with a little extra weight on him, and he takes a punishment.
Yeah, definitely interested to see some of those bumps as we move forward, because yeah, I could see even in a resemblance, right, to the Mankind with the hair and a little bit downtrodden and whatnot, right? That's that the kid you knew in high school a little bit, right? That you didn't quite know what was going on upstairs. That definitely he plays that role pretty well.
Yeah, for sure. So then we got the main event, and that's Justice Payne versus Yoshihiro Tajiri.
Yeah, so for me, fast start. Tajiri started out quick, then had the mist. Great mist work here, right? Payne is green from head to waist.
Uh-huh.
You know, it wasn't just let me to steal a line from that girl that's famous, a hak tui to the face.
Yeah.
It was a mist as the way it's supposed to be, and that looked really good. Nasty bump for Justice Payne as Tajiri tossed him over the ropes. Right out to the ground, looked ugly, looked not ugly in a way that it wasn't the way it was supposed to be. It just looked like it hurt. And you know, when you see those, it looks like it hurts, because it probably did. We're outside, hot shot, into a basement drop kick by Tajiri. The one thing that I'll say here is you can see that Tajiri is much more advanced than many others on this card, right? And I think that sometimes you want to have that star power to bring in the crowd, but I don't know that you want your star power to override your promotional guys. And I think Tajiri did that a little bit, not meaning to, but you can see, you know, he was much more crisp and he was much more, you know, where he was supposed to be, when he was supposed to be. You know, his selling was solid, everything else. He was definitely, to me, head and shoulders above most of the card, with the few exceptions we talked about earlier. Justice Payne holding his own in this match as well. So I thought Justice Payne looked good in this match. He has power. He can do some of the flip stuff, and he can work, you know, and sell, right? Selling is important, and he's able to do all of those. So, again, this is another guy I'm interested to see where it goes. I do know, unfortunately, we don't get to see him, you know, all the way through because of some tragedy and whatnot, but interested to see where this takes us. Again, though, you know, Jay, this is 7 out of 8 matches where we have interference.
Right.
And I get it. I get what this is, but, you know, too much interference for me. You know, there wasn't a clean finish in the whole night except for one match. You know, and that was the 5-way match, which was an interference match as it was, right? Like, you know, a 5-way barbed wire table match is, is the equivalent of interference, right? So here comes Mikey Whipwreck. He had got a good pop. And then, you know, the old tag team is back and so on and so forth. Match is over. Zandig comes on the screen and talks about Balls Mahoney. Justice Payne gets on the mic, and they set up the next show, which is exactly what they're supposed to do, right? They want you to hit the ticket booth on your way out so that you're there the next week, and I think they did that well here. I'm interested in it. Balls Mahoney, another one that isn't with us any longer, but I'm interested to see how this comes across. And again, as we started this this episode with, you know, is it going to be too much ECW for me, or is it going to fit in nicely? Definitely interested in seeing what happens next week and how they tie these things together. But I thought they did get me to want to go and watch next week, right? So if I was there, I would have wanted to buy a ticket to next week and see what happens.
For sure. And, you know, I didn't go to the following few shows because the following week, it was just too soon for me. And CZW did a lot of that. They were just like, yeah, motherfucker, guess what? Next week right here. And it's like, bitch, I can't get off of work 2 weeks in a row like that. I can't, you know, like, hold up. You know, so I was down and I was loving what I was seeing, but I wasn't like, they're like, you know what, we're going to Delaware next month. And I'm like, hold up, that's fucking 3 hours and change. And we got like 2 hours lost coming here. This is, yeah, hold up. So it took a while before I made the Delaware trip. I didn't want to commit to going, you know, three and a half hours away from my house. And so it was a minute before I started making Delaware trips. And like I said, I missed the one that was the following week, but I came right back the next month. And they absolutely sold me. Justice Payne overall, I was really impressed with him. I mean, you could watch a ton of shoot interviews that wrestlers would bury him. They said he was terrible, he was dangerous, he was this, he was that. But I thought he portrayed the champion great. He was good on the mic. He had a presence on the mic. He took bumps well. He just kind of did a lot. He called himself the Ultraviolent All-Star, and I think that fit a lot because he wasn't the full-on deathmatch guy. He wasn't the full-on strong-style guy, but he could kind of just do all of it a bit, you know. And he took some legendary bumps when it comes to the Pyramid of Hell back in 99 and all sorts of stuff. But, yeah, man.
Yeah, for me, you know, first match watching, like, you know, go back in time, he looked like a champion, right? I had no issue with him being the champion. I had no issue with, you know, with his look, with his work in the ring. Again, yes, Tajiri definitely looked more crisp than him, but he was able to stay with them, right? It wasn't, you know, Tajiri couldn't do it all on his own, and this was a good match. You know, I wouldn't say this was my favorite match of the night, but I think this was a solid match, and there was nothing, you know, there was nothing in this one that said, you know, oh, ooh, you know, thank God Tajiri was in there, otherwise this would have been ugly, like the Dahmer match earlier in the night with Rocker and Fast Eddie, right? This was solid from start to finish. The you know, post-match with Zandig, I get it. I get exactly what they were doing. And it worked, you know, overall, you know, I think it was a good ending to a okay show, right? I wouldn't say this was, I don't think this is going to rank up in the top 10 when we get through all the shows. But this match, you know, will hold up and did hold up, you know, to nowadays standards. So, you know, all good on this one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it does hold a fond place in my heart just because it was the first one I attended live, my first time seeing the Briscoes, my first time seeing this guy, my first time seeing that, you know. So to me, it always is going to hold a fond place in my heart, this show, completely, for those reasons. But yeah, if I were to just blind break down this card and its matches and its structure and all the things combined up against everything else, no way would I put this in one of my top shows.
Yeah, I thought the undercard was a little weak here. Right, again, first time seeing it, giving an objective opinion. Undercard was a little bit weak. There was definitely some ugly landings for some folks. But I think that's a part of this deathmatch style. I think that's going to happen because you got guys doing stuff that is over the top. It's different than what you're going to see on your TV shows, especially back then, right? TV is getting a little bit more wild now, but nothing like what you see here. You know, you're not seeing Cody Rhodes going, taking a backdrop over the top rope onto chairs and or a ladder or anything close to that. And you probably never will, but these guys are. So you're going to have those bobbles and those slip-ups, and I think that's what makes it endearing as well. You know, if I had to say, you know, would I go back and rewatch this? I would go back and rewatch a couple matches. I don't think I would spend the 2 hours to watch the whole show again, but I would definitely go and take a look at match 7 and 8, definitely. That's the five-way and then the main event. I would definitely go back and take a look at Ruckus again, the Briscoes, and Dahmer, as well as Trent Acid. Those are kind of the takeaways for me, with a little bit on Burke as well, Nick Burke. I thought he performed well, and that may have been Trent Acid carrying him. We'll have to see. But I thought he did his role in that match as well.
Yeah, for sure. And our next one up will be CZW Break On Through, which took place a week later. So, again, take that note to anyone who you thought, hey, man, he took a rough bump and all of that stuff. A week later, they went in the ring to do this Break On Through in the same building over there in Sewell, New Jersey. So that will be our next one covering. Hey, man, I had a great time doing this. I really think this is going to be a lot of fun going through all of this stuff. So, yeah, anything else you want to add about this show or as we close this thing out?
Yeah, the only thing to close out or before closing out is will this be your first time watching that, or did you watch it on iPay-per-view or whatever it was on back in the day?
Yeah, no, I went back and everything I didn't attend I watched. I mean, I would go to a show and then the following show I'd buy the tape from the show that I went to, and if they went to Delaware in between those shows, I'd buy that tape too. So, I mean, I invested. I saw everything before I started going. I saw the ones in between. I was so invested that, man, I had to see the show that I missed.
Gotcha. Okay. So it's going to be the same style as this time?
Yeah. So I will be watching it again to refresh my memory for sure.
Yeah. So it's going to be the same style. Yeah, from me to wrap up my end of it, right? If you enjoyed what we're doing, if you have any comments or feedback, the social media piece, Yakuza Kick Radio, put it up there. I know Jay, you posted on there that we're going to be doing this. Let us know, what we missed, how we did, et cetera. Keep it classy as we did today, right? I don't think we took shots at anybody. We were just honest and open. And do the same thing with us. Jay, I had a great time. This is exactly why I wanted to do it. And I think with you, as you know, we've been doing this for 30 plus years, watching wrestling and giving our opinions of it to each other. So great time. Thank you. I'll let you close it out, brother.
On the group page, we've had it up for, a decade plus. It's been up for a long, long time, but it's been very inactive. So feel free to, pop in there and create conversation, both the listeners and Stan. Feel free to create conversation amongst the listeners to try to, get something going in there. And if we can create conversations off of the things that we're saying on the show, even better that we get it interactive and functional, and we can grow that thing. But it's just kind of been there, so don't be too discouraged if we don't get a ton of feedback, because we generally don't.
All right, listen, we're going to still do this, because the big piece of this is it's a good time, and it's worth going back and seeing what these folks put themselves through for the entertainment piece of it. So we'll continue marching along on our journey through CZW.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to every bit of it, man. So we will continue this. We both have homework to watch Break On Through, and we will be back at you guys when we're done with what we're doing. I'll check you out next time, Stan.
All right. See you later, bro.
All right. Peace.
Talk to y'all later. Have a nice night. Stay dry. It's raining again. Hard as rain.
makes my grass green. I won't complain about that. That's all I gotta say. I'm out of here.
I love all of y'all, and, shit.
We're all a bunch of fucking assholes.
You've been in the gym, bro.
You know why?
DJ Hyde, fuck you.
You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me.
I'll listen to your podcast, and I'll find everything out. You know what I mean?
You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy. So, what I make you? Good?
Mike Cheese tells me all the time to listen to what you gotta say, because you be blazing people. And I'm like, well, I gotta hear it now.
You just know how to hide. A lot. Me, I don't have that part. Me, I always tell a truth. Even when I lie.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Jesus!
So say goodnight to the bad guy.
I'm gonna tell you something straight off the motherfucking breath. I ain't coming for no foolishness.